Great Expectations, Episode 3.
My sister lay very ill in bed. Her sight was disturbed, her hearing was greatly impaired, and her speech was unintelligible. A suitable attendant was wanting for her, and so Biddy became part of our establishment. Biddy was not beautiful. She was common, and could not be like Estella, but she was pleasant and wholesome and sweet-tempered. She had not been with us more than a year when I observed to myself that she had curiously thoughtful and attentive eyes, eyes that were very pretty and very good. One Sunday afternoon, Biddy and I went out together. It was summertime and lovely weather. When we came to the riverside and sat down on the bank, with the water rippling at our feet, I resolved that it was a good time for the admission of Biddy into my inner confidence.
Biddy, I want to be a gentleman.
Oh, I wouldn't if I was you. I don't think it would answer.
Biddy, I have particular reasons for wanting to be a gentleman.
You know best, Pip. But don't you think you're happier as you are?
Biddy, I'm not at all as happy as I am. I am disgusted with my calling and with my life. Don't be absurd.
Was I absurd? I'm sorry for that. I didn't mean to be. I only want you to do well and to be comfortable.
Well then, understand, I never shall or can be comfortable or anything but miserable, bare Biddy. Unless I can lead a very different sort of life from the life I lead now.
That's a pity.
If I could have settled down and been but half as fond of the forge as I was when I was little, I know it would have been much better for me. You and I and Joe would have wanted nothing then. And Joe and I would have perhaps gone partners when I was out of my time. And I might have even grown up to keep company with you. And we might have sat on this very bank on a fine Sunday. Quite different people. I should have been good enough for you, shouldn't I, Biddy?
Yes, I'm not over particular.
Instead of that, see how I'm going on. Dissatisfied and uncomfortable and what would it signify to me being coarse and common if nobody had told me so?
That was neither a very true nor a very polite thing to say. Who said it?
The beautiful young lady at Miss Havisham's. And she's more beautiful than anybody ever was. And I admire her dreadfully, and I want to be a gentleman on her account.
Do you want to be a gentleman to spite her or to gain her over?
I don't know.
Because if it is to spite her, I should think, but you know best, that might be better and more independently done by caring nothing for her words. And if it is to gain her over, I should think, but you know best, she was not worth gaining over.
It may all be quite true, but I admire her dreadfully.
I am glad of one thing, and that is you have felt you could give me your confidence, Pip. Shall we walk a little further or go home?
Biddy, I shall always tell you everything.
Until you're a gentleman.
If I could only get myself to fall in love with you. You don't mind my speaking so openly to such an old acquaintance.
Oh dear, not at all. Don't mind me.
If only I could get myself to do it. That would be the thing for me.
But you never will.
It was in the fourth year of my apprenticeship, and it was a Saturday night. There was a group assembled round the fire at the Three Jolly Bargemen.
From information I have received, I have reason to believe there is a blacksmith among you by name Joseph or Joe Gargery. Which is the man?
Here is the man.
You have an apprentice, commonly known as Pip. Is he here?
I'm here.
The stranger did not recognise me, but I recognised him as the gentleman I had met on the stairs at Miss Havisham's.
I wish to have a private conference with you two. Perhaps we'd better go to your place of residence.
Our conference was held in the parlour, which was feebly lighted by one candle.
My name is Jaggers, and I am a lawyer in London. I have unusual business to transact with you, and I commence by explaining that it is not my originating. Now, Joseph Gargery, I am the bearer of an offer to relieve you of this young fellow, your apprentice. You would not object to cancel his indentures at his request and for his good. You would not want anything for doing so.
Lord forbid that I should want anything for not standing in Pip's way.
Lord forbidding is pious, but not to the purpose. The question is, would you want anything? Do you want anything?
The answer is no.
Very well. Now, I return to this young fellow, and the communication I have got to make is that he has great expectations. I am instructed to communicate to him that he will come into a handsome property. Further, that it is the desire of the present possessor of that property that he be immediately removed from his present sphere of life and be brought up as a gentleman. In a word, as a young fellow of great expectations. Now, Mr. Pip, I address the rest of what I have to say to you. You are to understand first that it is the request of the person from whom I take my instructions that you are to always bear the name of Pip. You will have no objection, I dare say, to your great expectations being encumbered with that easy condition. But if you have any objection, this is the time to mention it.
I have no objection.
I should think not. Now, you are to understand, secondly, Mr. Pip, that the name of the person who is your liberal benefactor remains a profound secret. You are distinctly to understand that you are most positively prohibited from making any inquiry on this head, however distant in all the communications you may have with me. Again, not a very difficult condition with which to encumber such a rise in fortune, but if you have any objection to it, this is the time to mention it. Speak out.
I have no objection.
I should think not. Now, Mr. Pip, I have done with stipulations. There is already lodged in my hands a large sum of money, amply sufficient for your suitable education and maintenance. You will please consider me your guardian.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
I tell you at once, I am paid for my services or I shouldn't render them. When will you come to London?
I suppose I could come directly.
First, you should have some new clothes, and they should not be working clothes. Say, this day week? You'll want some money. Shall I leave you 20 guineas? Well, Joseph Gargery, you look dumbfounded.
Well, I am.
Well, Mr. Pip, I think the sooner you leave here, as you are to be a gentleman, the better.
No more low, wet grounds, no more dikes and sluices, no more grazing cattle. Farewell, monotonous acquaintances of my childhood. Henceforth, I was for London and greatness. Next morning, Joe brought out my indentures, and we put them in the fire. I went to the tailors, and the hatters, and the bootmakers, and the hosiers. I also went to the coach office and took my place for 7 o'clock on Saturday morning. So Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday passed, and on Friday morning, I went to pay my visit to Miss Havisham.
Well, Pip?
I start for London, Miss Havisham, tomorrow, and I thought you would kindly not mind my taking leave of you.
This is a gay figure, Pip.
I have come into such good fortune since I saw you last, Miss Havisham, and I am so grateful for it, Miss Havisham.
Aye. I have seen Mr. Jaggers. I have heard about it, Pip. So you go tomorrow?
Yes, Miss Havisham.
Well, you have a promising career before you. Be good. Deserve it. Abide by Mr. Jaggers' instructions. Goodbye, Pip. You will always keep the name of Pip, you know.
When I was on the coach and it was clear of the town, I deliberated with an aching heart whether I would not get down when we changed horses and walk back and have another evening at home. We changed, and I'd still not made up my mind when we changed again and yet again, and it was now too far to go back, and I went on. And the mists had all solemnly risen now. And the world lay spread before me. We Britons had at that time particularly settled that it was treasonable to doubt our having and our being the best of everything. Otherwise, I think I might have had some faint doubts whether London was not rather ugly, crooked, narrow and dirty. Mr. Jaggers had duly sent me his address. It was Little Britain, just out of Smithfield.
Is Mr. Jaggers at home?
He is not. He is in court at present. Am I addressing Mr. Pip?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Jaggers left word. Would you wait in his room? He couldn't say how long he might be, but it stands to reason, his time being valuable, that he won't be any longer than he can help.
Mr. Jaggers's room was a most dismal place. There were some odd objects about, such as two dreadful casts on a shelf of faces peculiarly swollen and twitchy about the nose.
Pray, whose likenesses are these?
These are two celebrated ones, famous clients of ours that got us a world of credit. This chap murdered his master, and, considering he wasn't brought up to evidence, didn't plan it badly.
Is it like him?
Like him? It's himself, you know. The cast was made in Newgate, directly after he was taken down. You had a particular fancy for me, didn't you, old artful?
Ah, Mr. Pip, you are to go to Barnard's Inn to young Mr. Pocket's rooms, where a bed has been sent him for your accommodation. Here are the cards of certain tradesmen with whom you are to deal. You will find your credit good, Mr. Pip, but I shall by this means be able to check your bills and to pull you up if I find you outrunning the constable. Of course, you'll go wrong somehow, but that's no fault of mine. Wemmick will walk you round to Barnard's Inn. Good day, Mr. Pip.
Casting my eyes on Mr. Wemmick as we went along, I found him to be a dry man, rather short in stature, with a square wooden face, whose expression seemed to have been imperfectly chipped out with a dull-edged chisel.
So, you were never in London before?
No.
I was new here once.
Is it a very wicked place?
You may get cheated, robbed, and murdered in London, but there are plenty of people anywhere who'll do that for you.
When he said we were at Barnard's Inn, my depression was not alleviated by the announcement. We entered into a melancholy little square that looked to me like a flat burying ground. I thought it had the most dismal trees in it, and the most dismal sparrows, and the most dismal houses that I have ever seen. While dry rot and wet rot and all the silent rots that rot in neglected roof and cellar, rot of rat and mouse and bug and coaching stables near at hand, addressed themselves faintly to my sense of smell and moaned, "Try Barnard's mixture."
Ah, the retirement reminds you of the country, so it does me.
He led me into a corner and conducted me to a set of chambers on the top floor. Mr. Pocket, Jr. was painted on the door, and there was a label on the letterbox. Return shortly.
You don't want me anymore?
No, thank you.
If at any odd time when you have nothing better to do, you wouldn't mind coming over to see me at Woolworth, I could offer you a bed and I should consider it an honour.
I would be delighted.
Well, thank you. Have you been invited to dine with Mr. Jaggers yet?
Not yet.
When you go to dine with Mr. Jaggers, look at his housekeeper.
Shall I see something very uncommon?
Well, you'll see a wild beast tamed. It won't lower your opinion of Mr. Jaggers's powers. Keep your eye on it. Good day.
Mr. Pocket Jr.'s idea of shortly was not mine, for I had nearly maddened myself with looking out for half an hour before I heard footsteps on the stairs.
Mr. Pip?
Mr. Pocket?
Oh, dear me, I am extremely sorry. The fact is, I have been out on your account, not that that is any excuse, for I thought, coming from the country, you might like a little fruit, and I went to Covent Garden Market to get it good. Pray come in. I am rather bare here, but I hope you'll be able to make out tolerably well. This is our sitting room. This is my little bedroom, rather musty, but Barnard's is musty. And this is your bedroom. I trust it will answer the purpose.
As I stood opposite to Mr. Pocket, Jr., I saw the same starting appearance come into his own eyes that I knew to be in mine.
Lord bless me! You're the prowling boy!
And you are the pale young gentleman!
You've been listening to Great Expectations by Charles Dickens, adapted by Marcus Baisley, produced as a collaboration between Blackshaw Theatre and Cyphers. The narrator was played by Jeremy Drakes, Magwitch and Pumblechook by Dylan Lincoln, Compeyson, Porter and Galley by Marcus J. Baisley, Estella and Mrs. Joe by Victoria Hamblin, Pip by Rupert Sadler, Joe, Wemmick and Drummle by Christopher Anderton, Sergeant and Jaggers by Alexander Pankhurst, Miss Havisham by Jessica Bryan, Herbert Pocket by William Holyhead and Biddy by Rosie Marsh. Sound recording and design by Andrew Crane. Produced by Helen Johnson and Aisha Chapman.